in studying Bhagavad Gita. Let us remember that we are studying a scripture. And for whom the scripture is? The one who has already reached the goal of human life. For that person, scripture is not necessary. The one who does not want to get there, for that person also, the scripture is irrelevant. But the one who has not reached but wants to reach and is ready to put in the efforts, then for that person the scripture becomes meaningful. And just as like the we see the driving directions. If you don't want to go, why keep the driving directions? You don't need them. If you have already reached, again you don't need to look at them. So, in between you need them. Yeah, I want to go. And thus you start, and so you look at the driving directions. There also another thing comes in, that you need to have faith in those driving directions. If we are very full of ego, that no, I don't care, I know, I don't need to ask, I don't need to, we can find out. It is sometimes considered a typical male mentality, you know, that I don't want to ask. Usually it is statistically seen that normally male, they don't stop. They stop only when, after moving around for an hour or so, spending lot of gas and lot of time and lot of energy, then they agree to stop and ask somebody about directions. But the directions, when you ask directions, you need to have an implicit faith in that those directions are right. Otherwise, why did you go to take them in the first place? If you think that they are wrong, then you don't need them. It is, so there has to be an implicit faith. You ask the directions only to a person whom you feel that the person knows. Then only there is point in asking that person a direction. You don't ask the direction to somebody who is equally confused like you are. So, no point in seeking guidance from them. So, therefore, in scriptural advice, these things are important for whom the scripture is meant. So, if we are striving to attain the ultimate goal of human life, then only they have some meaning for us. If we are just collecting some information, it is just our kind of pastime, or studying them from some other point of view, like finding out the history of it, at what time it might have been written, was it in the Christian era or before Christian era, how many years before Christian, those things are of course important from a different standpoint for the study of history and all that is important. But the intent of the scriptures is different, to take us towards the goal of human life. Why I want to discuss it right now is because Bhagavad Gita is giving some very practical things now. We have been studying it every Friday, and now it is a psychology of human beings that is being explained for the understanding and for proceeding from there. Understanding must help us to chalk our path. It is not just academic understanding, but it is a practical guidance. When you understand, then accordingly you proceed. So we saw last time while studying, the signs of a perfected soul, the one who is established in wisdom. And this person, therefore, we saw, because of the perfection, doesn't crave for anything, doesn't feel elated when some gain comes in life, so-called gain, and doesn't feel depressed if some calamity comes in life, because there is nothing going to be reduced, nothing can be added to it. It is the state of perfection. Sometimes we feel that even a perfect person will have desires. We forget that desires are sign of imperfection. When we lack something, then only desire is possible. What I already have, if I already have everything, if I do not need anything, then that is perfection, and there is therefore absolute, total impossibility of desires and the outcome of desires in this person's life. And a sign that was told last time, a very beautiful analogy was given, that of a tortoise. That just to bring the contrast in our understanding, that how a common person, a person who is ignorant, because an ignorant person has desires, so it is looking for the objects to fulfill those desires. And when those objects are perceived, the organs, sense organ, kind of go to grab those. They protrude out to grab, to get those things. So, this is how a common person's life is. That, yes, this is a very nice thing. I want it. And you can see, the glitter in the eyes. The mind starts kind of dancing. All that excitement comes to grab those things. This person's attitude is completely different there. Nothing is to be grabbed. Nothing can excite that person. And so, the person is, therefore, the organs do not protrude out. Rather, they go in. They become, they are so calmed down that those objects, not only they do not pull the organs towards them, but the organs rather go inside. Why? Because that person has been practicing control, and thus that habit has made those organs go in when such objects of so-called enjoyment. Because although a common man sees there as an object of enjoyment, this man of wisdom, this person of wisdom sees them as traps. So that is the difference. When you see the trap, you run away from that. No, I don't want to get into the trap. When you see the object of enjoyment, you kind of run there to grab it. This person's perceptions have changed. There are further some more verses to illustrate that, which will come later. Right now, this distinction is to be remembered, that a person of enlightenment, a person steady in wisdom, has a very different kind of life from, as compared to the life of ordinary person. See, in Vedanta and Sankhya, there is a beautiful description of how the organs function, the sensory organs. There are five sensory organs. We all know them, like the ears, then eyes, the sense of smell, the sense of touch, and the sense of taste. Of these, the sense of eyes, I mean sight, the sense of sight is an outgoing something. That is why we see the object there. Like Sharad is sitting there. Although my eyes are seeing it, it doesn't. I don't see him sitting in the eye. I see that the person is sitting there. So, eye has gone out and grabbed the object. So, it is outgoing. Similarly, about the sense of hearing, that you know the sound is heard somewhere, that person is singing and I am hearing, the sense of sound also goes out. Whereas the sense of taste, no, the object has to come there, you know. It is the sense doesn't go and you don't get the feeling that yes, that candy there is enjoying. No, it is. You have the candy and then you feel that the candy has become one with you. So it is similarly with the taste, the sense of smell and touch. It is the object comes to them, whereas these two senses, the object, the senses go out to grab the objects. So, now comes a very important topic that we discussed a little bit last time, that it is not just external control of senses. Externally a person may restrain, but that restrainment doesn't take away the relish therein. One may restrain for various reasons, for the health reasons, or for some spiritual religious reasons. No, I am fasting today. Today it is Friday, I can't be doing this, I can't eat meat today. So, although there is the desire to eat meat, but one controls, you know, today it is, let me control, today I won't eat. So, it is the person who fasts, no, says, no, I won't eat today. But it is a control. The mechanism of control is like you have the dog on a leash. Not that the tendency of the dog to run has gone away, but can't run because you have put it on a tight leash. So it doesn't go away. So similarly, the mind is eager to grab those objects, no doubt. There is the relish there, but you have put a leash on them and said, no, not now, wait, it is, no, you will not be allowed to get this. And therefore, the mind, although is that is not visibly going out to grab the objects, the relish doesn't go. In fact, then it finds out the ways to get it in a different way, in a subtle or in a covert manner, it tries to get those. That is the verse that we were studying last time. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinah rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. It is the 59th verse of the second chapter. The translation reads, from an abstemious embodied being, sense objects fall off, but not the relish. But even this relish of the man of steady wisdom ceases when that supreme being is realized. When the relish is still there, the external control is applied. External control is applied to restrain, but the relish still remains, and thus this person is not an illumined person. It doesn't mean that you should not apply restraint. You have to just remember that that is not the final attainment. It doesn't mean that so you should throw all restraint to the wind. Not like something that Freud suggests. It is not the what Freud has analyzed. Freud was he did a really brilliant breakthrough work in analyzing this kind of responses that the restraint creates in a person. In literature, you always have found them, but Freud was the first to analytically study those and find out that how these things work. And he found the study started with patients whom he found that they have some physical problems, but those physical problems seem to have no cause exactly in the body, but somewhere deeper. And how those problems came up. So he thought that there must be some cause within, some hidden, repressed desires must have been there. So he tried to find out how, and through he found had a brilliant idea that maybe their dreams will be able to show those things. His very nice and very logical theory was that when you are awake, you are aware, you are conscious that you should keep all those things in check, all those desires, you don't want them to be expressed, so you hold them. But when you go to bed, like the sentry, this sentry is guarding all those desires, is not allowing them to go out. So that sentry is there, but that sentry goes into stupor. And then these desires, they find scope to come out and express themselves. And they express, therefore, in dream. But in dream also, they do not come in their real colors. They change their colors. Because the sentry, although is in stupor, is still watching them. If they come in their real colors, the fellow is sure to stop them. So therefore, the color is changed. They are the devils, the wolves take the cloak of sheep, and then otherwise in waking state, even if the wolf is taking the cloak of sheep, the fellow is doing the work properly, and so we'll see inside, put them in the what you call that metal detector or whatever, we'll see that, hey, you fellow, only the skin is that of sheep, you are really a wolf, so get out, go in, and will not be allowed to come out. But in sleep, the fellow is also tired and looks only at the skin. Like it happens even at the airport checking, because those people also human beings overworked. Looks okay. So sometimes those scissors and other things, they sometimes are caught, sometimes are not caught. Because the fellow is too much of rush and didn't get good sleep at night or thinking of something else. So those things get through. So here too, what happens in the state of that dream state, those things start playing in different forms. So, and then, if it is only the effect is in the dream state, and when you wake up you have no effect of it, then it might not have mattered that much. But here comes the real important thing that Vedanta again and again points out in the analysis of the three states. Our Lori says that in Vedanta always you hear the same thing, waking state, dream state, the same. It is nothing new in Vedanta, you know. All the time you hear the same thing. So yes, again we are today at the dream state. So if it is finished at the dream state, it wouldn't have that much bearing. But it is the same being. What Vedanta points out is the experiencer does not change in these three states. I know the one who was seeing the dream is the same person is in the waking state. I know it is my dream. If Gloria sees a dream, then she won't say that it is Swami your dream. It is my dream. She knows in my dream our Swami was being invited by one devotee. The Swami didn't want to go to his house. He didn't see any particular reason to go. So that devotee said, "Oh Swami, I saw you coming to my home in my dream. So please come. I saw you in dream that you came to my home." Then Swami replied, "Oh, okay, then in the dream I will come." And also said that if I see in my dream that I am going to your home, then I may consider it is your dream, is for you. So it is not my dream. So the dreamer knows that after the waking state, I was dreaming. I am now in the waking state, same I. All these different states, that beautiful verse of Shankaracharya in Dakshinamurti Stotra, Balyadishvapi jagridadishu tatha sarvasvavastha svapi vyavrutta svanuvartamanamahameti antaspurantam sada. That these states like childhood, youth, or the old age, I know their body is different, but they are my state. I remain the same in all the three states. Similarly, in the dream states, and waking state, and the state of deep sleep, all these states, they are my. The experiencer didn't change. So, what happens is that you let them out in dream, but then they keep on causing havoc in your waking state too. So that is what sometimes is called in psychology as behavioral complexes and the health issues that arise out of it. Now, Freud's idea was, so let those restrictions not be there. That is not what Vedanta says. Vedanta says that let those restrictions be there, but be understood as they are not going to stop the problem for all the time. You have to take further measures. Let the process of illuminating yourself, sublimating your desires, let that process continue further. That is the idea. That when you see the truth, then all desires are gone. Even the relish is gone. Otherwise the relish remains. That doesn't mean that you should not then have the control. You still must have the control and yet practice to get the illumination. Go ahead, to get the illumination so that the control will not be necessary. It is not only in the matters of desires, in everything that we do. Somebody learning to play piano, first has to be consciously putting the fingers here. One has to be very conscious that to put the fingers on the right keys. And if the person is not conscious, will make many mistakes. So it is really an ordeal in the beginning to watch music and accordingly to press the keys. But afterwards, when this practice makes the person perfect, then really doesn't have to look at the keys. The things go on naturally. Mistake is not possible there because all this is spontaneously now tuned and the fingers have been trained and that stage. But how does it come? First, the conscious practice. That conscious practice culminates into a perfection. When there is perfection, now the person doesn't have to worry about looking at each key. So similarly, when this control gradually leads to illumination, one has to follow the proper process for that. It is the illumination comes and then the control becomes spontaneous. Because now the relish also has gone. And now the person will not be needed to be told, hey, restraint, keep check, keep an eye. If your tendencies, they pull you out, be wary of your behavior, be wary about the situation around, be wary about the temptations. So, therefore, the prayer is required there. Do not lead me into temptations. That prayer is required at that stage. And so, the spiritual aspirant, therefore, makes every effort. Just as people are aware of the dangers, they make every effort to avoid it, like the soldiers walking in the enemy territory. They have to be wary about the landmines which might be there. So they take precautions. Adequate precautions are taken for that. They should not march. They should not go there. If that is the case, then they will not be able to conquer. So, they should march ahead, they should forge ahead, but by proper care and caution. So, this is a very important verse, that when the truth is seen, then the control is not to be put now. It is spontaneous. So, the person is like it is breathing for that person. Just as breathing is spontaneous, one doesn't have to say, let me breathe now. I am taking breath in and then let me breathe out. Of course, in some people who have that asthma problem, even breathing is a very laborious thing. But otherwise, breathing is spontaneous. So similarly, the control is spontaneous. The word control really doesn't become applicable there. So this is the life of such person. And then Shri Krishna tells that for otherwise, if you are a spiritual aspirant, but not yet there, you have not yet reached the goal, then caution, restraint, control should not be relaxed. You should keep your eyes open always in our roads in where I used to be in Shillong, near that very hilly region, and curvy roads and all, traffic on both sides, narrow winding roads. So safety signs used to be posted there all along, that relax and don't see, it is the accident can take place. Just if you are off your caution, you may end up in accident. Maybe just a second. It doesn't take 2 seconds for the collision. Just 1 second is enough. So, therefore, in life, one has to be cautious all the time. Because, why? Because the forces, we are not aware how strong are the desires in us. When we keep them in check, we feel that, they are well behaved. They are not turbulent at all. Relax the control and let thing that they get attracted to be around, and we see that how they will run away. Like that lorry's dog the other day, didn't know that well if there is some other dog outside. So when there was another dog outside, lorry thought that there is nothing, so she did not put the dog in the bag. So when she went out, and the dog just ran, and lorry was running behind it. So it is like that. Why does that happen? Because our senses seem to be calm. They are calm for two reasons. One is that you have held them in check. Secondly, there is no immediately an object of their attraction in vicinity. So they look calm. But then when there was another dog that was seen, this dog just ran towards. So it is like that. It is our behavior also is to be therefore kept under control. This verse says, 60th verse,
yat to yapi kaunteya purushasya vipaschitah indriyani pramathini haranti prasabham manah.
The turbulent senses, O son of Kunti, forcibly lead astray the mind of even the struggling wise person. A wise person, but not established in wisdom, knows many things, has heard the scriptures, and knows that he or she should progress towards the goal. So wise in that sense, and is making efforts. Still, that person should be very careful, because the senses are very powerful. They desires, they energize them to such an extent that then once they start rushing out, control becomes next to impossible. So, therefore, Lord Krishna tells that look, even for those, here the commentary of Shankara is very illuminating. It is said there, yatato yapi, means even in the case of wise persons, it is that even is sometimes not read properly. And it is seen that the wise person's organs also, get turbulent and drag the mind. So Yogatmananda says that, well, I am not wise, I am a fool, so I have no danger to worry about. Shankara comments there, see, even it happens to wise, what to speak of the fools, you see. In case of fools, it is bound to happen when it happens. In case of wise too. Like even millionaires cannot buy that, it is so costly that millionaires also cannot buy that. It automatically means that those who are with meager income, they cannot certainly buy that. So even the wise and struggling person, the one who is making efforts, that person has also to be very cautious and making all efforts what to speak of other people. Otherwise what happens is, if there is no such effort and understanding, the mind finds out the ways to covertly enjoy. So because of that, it is told that what you should be doing. These words are so beautiful in this verse that we read. Every word is so full, packed with lot of rich meaning, that the turbulent senses, we must understand that the senses can get very turbulent. When they are not in the vicinity of object of enjoyment, or when they are tired, or when they are under restraint, you feel that they are quite calm, like a devil sleeping. Then you feel very calm fellow, it's not a devil at all. Why they call devil? Well, the fellow is sleeping, let that fellow wake up and you will see then. So, it is like that. It is like a tiger asleep, who is not going to do any harm to you. But, let the fellow wake up. So, it is like that. So, one has to be very cautious. In Florida, we were seeing those alligators and crocodiles in that, what is that river? Everglades. So, in that Everglade park, we were seeing that. And some of them were just lying without any, activity seen there, and just on the road. So, but the guide told that don't try to go too near, because then that alligator will get scared. And you don't know, they are all muscles. It is, now they are not running, so you feel that they are powerless. In one jump they will get you, even if you are running. So therefore, be careful. So our sense organs also are like those sleeping crocodiles, even when we see that they are calm. Even then one has to be cautious about it. See, this is the beauty of the psychology of Sankhya and Vedanta. Without taking anything away from the great work that the Western psychology does, without taking away any wonderful research that they have done and the insights that they have obtained, we must maintain that this idea of arriving at the goal by properly utilizing controls is completely absent there. It is very important here that the controls are to be applied, controls are to be used to go forward in that direction of the ultimate goal, where then the controls will not be required. It becomes spontaneous. There is no possibility when you know that there is nothing to be enjoyed, it doesn't create any turbulence in the mind. So, it is said in the next verse, what you should therefore do, tani sarvani sanyamya
युक्त आसीत मत्परः वशे हि यस्येन्द्रियाणि तस्य प्रज्ञा प्रतिष्ठिता.
कंट्रोलिंग ऑल दिस सेंसेस The self-controlled one should sit meditating on me. Verily, his wisdom is steady whose senses are under control. So, first line gives the twofold practice a spiritual aspirant needs to do. In all these scriptures, you will see this twofold practice. One is control. Don't do what is going to hurt you, and do that which will be able to help you to forge ahead. So, on the one hand, stop going towards the sense objects because they are going to bind you. Remember that. Our idea that those objects are going to bring me pleasure, it is same, exactly same, that the mouse has the idea that cookie in the trap is going to fulfill me, satisfy me. So only the mice are usually wiser, that if they get caught once, then they get wise, don't approach that trap again. Human beings, let us not talk about it. So, it is, so don't approach these so-called objects of enjoyment. That is one thing. And then positive, go to God, think of God, think of the divine nature, think of that perfection. Till that is the goal, as Jesus says, be thou perfect, nothing less than perfection, friends. Be thou perfect, as thy Father in heaven is perfect. Only in perfection complete that there is this cessation of all this struggle. It is when we reach, then we can now relax, not before that. Before that, avoid the temptations and go on forging, marching ahead towards the goal. The meditation on the truth and restraining yourself from the sense objects. This is the way for all of us. There is, friends, many ask that is there a different way? Well, had there been a different way, the scriptures would have given that. But since there is no other way, they don't give it. It is if we have to practice it to the extent we can. But let us not foolishly make compromises or have wrong understanding that even if I rush to get sense enjoyments, still I will get God realization, still I will reach the goal. It is just not possible. It is not true from any angle. And therefore it is said here that you keep the sarvani, keep all your sense organs under control. It is, suppose you may say, I will control not all, maybe two of them instead of all the five. If I put two under control, will it not do? Or it is not so. It is in some scriptures, in Manusmriti, or in some of Shankaracharya's works, you see that it is given that this idea that you want to fill the pitcher with water. Now pitcher has five holes. Now if the five holes are there, you pour the water, it will just get out from the pitcher. You will not have a full pitcher. Now if you say, well, I will plug four, let one remain open, still the result will be same, only it will take a little more time for the pitcher to get empty, that's all. So this is Sri Krishna therefore says, Tani Sarvani, all of them are to be controlled, and Yukta Asita Matparaha, that know that your supreme goal, the God, the Self of all, that is to be meditated upon, thought upon, because as you meditate, so you become. Our thoughts guide our life. So, why we go after sense objects so much, that process that will come later, that how this our thoughts gradually make us bound, make us slave to these so-called enjoyments. It is, here it is said that when you think about an object, then you get slowly bound to the object. Now use the same principle to evolve yourself, that bind yourself to God. That is meditation. Meditation is binding yourself to God in various ways. You know, there are different types of meditations, but all have this common idea that tie yourself with your goal. Make yourself united with your ideal. That is, keep on focusing on that, keep on thinking about that. It is that is what in Bible you read about the incessant prayer. That you keep on praying incessantly. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's work also you see that keep incessantly praying. Keep on thinking about God in various ways. Tie your mind to God. Tell yourself that all my so-and-so, my family, my friends, my possessions, my so-called objects of enjoyment, they are not real. They are evanescent. So why should I waste my energies running after them? Did I not see it doing for so many years of my life? And what did I get from that? Come, think about that, and thus you will develop dispassion from them and tell that God alone is yours. I had so many times narrated to you that incident in the one of our Swamis was traveling in train in India, and they have the sleeper coaches. So everybody slept at night, and when the Swami woke up in the morning, Swamis wake up normally early. So when the Swami woke up, he found others were all sleeping in that compartment. There are, or cubicle, you have six people sleeping, three in one tier. So when he woke up, he found that there is a valet there. Somebody's valet is on the floor. So he took it, and when everybody woke up, all were seated, then he told that I have found a valet on the floor this morning. It obviously is one of you other five. It is not mine, so it is one of you five. But whosoever is the owner of that valet should tell me an identification sign, then only I will give to that person. So they started looking in there, and one of them, an old gentleman, said, "Oh, it's mine," and told that there is a photograph of Lord Krishna inside. And that Swami took out the wallet, showed to everybody, yeah, here is the photograph of Krishna. Yes, sir, it's yours. And that old gentleman then narrated that day, you know, this wallet has a history. It was given to me by my dad when I was just clearing my high school. And I was then very proud young man. And where you are seeing the photograph of Krishna, it was my photograph there, you know. I used to admire myself then. Then later on, I fell in love with one girl and then I got married to her. I don't know when my photograph was replaced by her photograph. It used to give me so much of joy and solace. I used to look at her and all that. Not in a sarcastic way. One wife told, you know, she used to look at her husband's photograph every now and then. And the husband thought, wow, wonderful, she thinks so highly of me. Then the wife immediately brought him down. Now, you know, your photograph gives me so much of inspiration. Then she told him further, because when I look at it, I see that if I can solve this problem, if I can handle this problem, I can handle any in the world. So, not in that sense. I used to admire that photograph of my wife. And soon we had a child. And without my knowledge, I don't know when my wife's photograph went out of that wallet and my child's photograph took the place. He was a nice son and he grew up. And when afterwards he grew up, now, you know, he has his own family, stays somewhere. And we seldom meet these days on some special days, sometimes maybe Thanksgiving or the Indian version of Thanksgiving. And we sometimes meet, that's all. See, I am realizing slowly that nobody really belongs to me. Who is my own? Who is really mine? Everything that I possessed just went away. Nothing of this is mine. And then I put the picture of Lord here. Lord is always mine. So, think of that. That is the only thing that is ours. Wherever we are, other people will come and go from our life. Lord never goes away. Always there. So, therefore, that picture has to be installed in the wallet of our heart. And we will see that that is always with us. So that is the other thing. Keep away from the temptations and install the picture of Lord in our heart. Then we progress towards the ultimate goal. The coming verses also will illustrate that it is a psychologically very beautiful about 4 or 5 verses coming. They are so important that how a person gets trapped. It is not just as the progress doesn't come in a day. Similarly, the so-called downfall also doesn't come at a single instant. It is a process that was taking place that you got trapped at one moment, but you were running towards the trap for a long time. So, check yourself while you were running there. So, as they say in English, a stitch in time saves 9. You know? So, later on even 9 will not be enough, you see. So, it is a stitch in time to plug the hole when there is still time to plug. So, we shall try to discuss that in the next Friday's class. Any questions? Yes, Charles?
Did Ramakrishna's direct disciples have to control their desires, or were the desires just not there?
Well, when they got the illumination, after that they didn't need to control. Before that, they practiced tremendous control. They did the spiritual practices to control that, yes. So let us conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita sugita kartavya kimanyat shastra vistarai ya svayam padmanabhasya mukha padmadvinisrita ekam shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.